Good evening. This is the Voice of America in Washington. Welcome to another edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'm Douglas Impulga. This evening, we'll talk about the crackdown on protesters in Ethiopia. And with us tonight is Mohammed Ademo. Mohammed is a journalist with Al Jazeera and Opride.com. He joins us by phone from here in the nation's capital, Washington. Good afternoon, Mr. Ademo.
Thank you so much for having me.
You're very much welcome. We also have Mr. Geresu Tufa. He is a human rights activist. He's based in Amsterdam in the Netherlands. Good evening, Mr. Tufa.
Good evening, Douglas.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you very much. As I said, our topic tonight is going to be the crackdown on protesters in Ethiopia. Reports claim that security forces have killed at least between 7 and 10 students in more than 2 weeks across Ethiopia's Oromia state, where students have been protesting a government plan to expand the area of the capital, Addis Ababa, into Oromia. Around 150 people have been injured and 500 have been arrested, although persistent demonstrations has led to the release of some 140 or so, according to opposition sources. Now, let me begin here in Washington with Mr. Ademo. First, bring us up to date. What's the current situation?
The current situation is, as you say, the students have been protesting for almost 3 weeks now. And it doesn't seem to be slowing down. So we are seeing an expansion on almost daily basis. So the protests and the resistance has reached up to about 36 towns and almost all major universities in Ethiopia, 36 towns in the Oromia state. And the students are engaging in different forms of resistance. They are doing sit-ins, and they are walking out of lunch and walking out of classes, boycotting meetings and other things. So it seems like the situation is going from bad to worse as the government has deployed heavily armed security forces in almost all of the towns where protests have been reported. We have seen pictures of heavily armed police in military convoys patrolling towns and, in some cases, firing tear gas and live ammunition at protesters. And we are also hearing reports today that actually about 5 to 6 more people have been killed just today alone, in addition to the 7 or 10 that have been reported in the past. So, as I said, it seems like the protests are continuing to escalate, and the government is continuing to use force to suppress it. And we are hoping that the international community and the media would actually pick up this story now that there have been more bloods and crackdowns coming out.
Mr. Geresu, as far as we know, these students' protests are peaceful. They're meant to be peaceful. Is that correct?
Yes, it was. It is peaceful, and still the students are opposing peacefully. But the reaction from the government is whether they are doing it peacefully or not. They are trying to crush with force. So that is what leading to the killing of a lot of students. And damage of a lot of things. So the student is demonstrating and opposing peacefully.
Yes, but for context purposes, Mr. Geresu, explain to our listeners how Oromia and Addis Ababa relate, because some people might not know, but Addis Ababa is an Oromia region, right? Is that correct?
Yes. Oromia is the largest federal region in Ethiopia. It's like comparable to California state or like comparable to France. Addis Ababa is located in the center of Oromia. It's serving like the capital city for the federal Ethiopian federal government and for Oromia regional state also. So for the last 160-170 years, this part of Ethiopia, I mean, this Oromia is occupied by the small state called Abyssinia from north.
Mm-hmm.
They established some kind of settler state in the center of Addis Ababa. Oromos have been marginalized in this area. Their number is very small in even though they are surrounding 360 degree Oromia. So people have been evicted for almost for 120-30 years from this area. So the current plan is to continue the eviction, to continue this historical injustice.
Mm-hmm.
And it is evicting farmers around. And if the plan continues to be implemented, it will affect like around 6 million Oromo farmers around.
Mm.
So the conflict, the triggering conflict is this one, even though there are a lot of problems, which is background to the frustration of the people.
I see. Mr. Ademo, Oromia is the largest of the Ethiopia's 9 ethnically based states. And the cause of this whole problem is described as the master plan or the proposed Addis Ababa surrounding Oromia Special Zone Integrated Development Plan, where the capital is supposed to be expanding. Why is this? How has it become contentious if the capital wants to expand?
The plan was designed by the federal government and is being pushed from top down to the people and to the local towns in the Oromia state. So part of the problem is that the stakeholders, the Oromo people in the Oromia government, were not at the table. At least the people feel that the people who are involved in the designing of the master plan were not the true representative of the people. And the plan, as my friend Garasu pointed out, will displace millions of Oromo farmers with little to no compensation, which means that you will sell your land or you will be moved from your land and given a small amount of money in the form of compensation, if you are even given that, which... you would spend on providing for your family, and then you become homeless, and you turn around and work for development companies for a very small pay. So this is one of the problems. The other problem is that the Oromos are original to this land, and they attach so much value, so much importance to the land, and the land really is about their life, and moving them means that the just like as in Addis Ababa, which was originally an Oromo city, which now most of the majority of residents don't speak Oromo or don't look like Oromo in terms of their cultural mores and whatnot. So the plan, by expanding, will not just displace but also dismantle their cultural roots. Their language will be, by expanding Addis Ababa, the language of the region would be Amharic, which is the official language of the government, which means that Oromo students will be forced to learn in Amharic as opposed to their native language, which the current constitution provides for them. Now, the issues are very complex. Obviously, this is just a trigger, as you mentioned, but, you know, the young people in Ethiopia today feel increasingly not valued enough, and they don't feel like the government is investing too much in their future because most of the investment is going to mega development projects. There is massive unemployment. The young people are graduating and not finding jobs because finding a job requires membership in the ruling party. So the issues are very complex, but these are some of the triggers, some of the things that the protesters are asking the government. But essentially, it becomes a question of self-rule because the constitution, as you said, is ethnic-based. federalism, and you know, activists in the Oromo opposition have been saying that the ethnic federalism has not been properly applied in the last 20 years, where the federal government continues to push things from top to down as opposed to decentralized form of government. And the Oromos increasingly want autonomy in self-rule in their state within Ethiopia, and the government is not implementing the law or the constitution as it should be. So these are some of the ongoing discontents that we are seeing that is feeding into the protests as the protests expand far, far beyond the surrounding Addis Ababa area.
I see. Yeah, those are quite, they are quite, it's a quite a long story. But Mr. Geresu, many opposition politicians and activists are describing this as a land grab. Do you share that view? And if so, why do you think it's a land grab?
I strongly share that opinion. As my friend Muhammad described, the government is taking away the land without the consent of the people who are living there and giving away to the rich individuals who are affiliated with the government and who have collected the wealth through power. So those people who are been surviving on this land are left alone without any help. The money which they are getting from us in the form of compensation is very minimal. It cannot sustain their life. As Muhammad said, land is not only, is not something, it's not commodity, and it's not something you can give a small amount of money and then the people would continue their life. It was everything for them. So these people, they don't have any prospect in the future. And the process is like taking away from the poor and enriching those who are already rich by using power in by using state power. So they are evicting people and systematically and taking away the land. So it is a land grab. Actually, it's not only limited. This one is the sensitive one, but not limited. The land grab is very massively going on in Jeta, in Gambella, in some other areas. So it is a part of the ongoing massive land grab, the one we are talking now.
I see. Mohamed, Ethiopia is known at least for cracking down on protesters. This is the first time. But now, with many mass students, as you describe them, participating in these peaceful protests and some getting killed, the police itself has confirmed at least three fatalities in what it termed as provocations by anti-peace elements. A number have been arrested. Some have even been charged. Do you think the approach of cracking down will work this time?
I don't think so. If the crackdown and the violent response to peaceful protesters were to work, it would have prevented the students from protesting again, because last year, in April and May, the students took to the streets essentially with the same demands that they are putting forward right now, which were triggered by the introduction of the new master plan that we have been discussing. In, you know, dozens of students were killed, hundreds were arrested, and a lot of properties were destroyed as police responded by force. And, you know, again, we've seen the same thing, but even more, you know, the protesters this year are far more widespread and far more organized, far more disciplined than we have seen in the past. So the crackdown in the violence is not working. It is so unfortunate that in Ethiopia, the legal system or the judiciary serves as the extension of the state to repress the public, and no one has been held accountable for the police abuses that were reported by human rights organizations in the media last year. And I fear that we may not hear any accountability for the ongoing crackdown and the violence that the police and security forces are using to suppress what is essentially a peaceful movement with very genuine grievances that Gareth just described.
I see. Well, gentlemen, we're going to take a short break. We'll continue our discussion of the crackdown on protesters in Ethiopia just after this very brief break. Welcome back. In case you're just tuning in, you're listening to Reporters Roundtable, and we're coming to you live from the Voice of America studios here in Washington. Our topic tonight is the crackdown on protesters in Ethiopia. Our panelists are Mohammed Ademo, a journalist with Al Jazeera and Oprah.com. We also have Geresu Tufa, a human rights activist based in Amsterdam. And I'm your host, Douglas Impuga, here in Studio 9 in Washington. Let me come back to Mohammed first. Both of you mentioned that, all of us know who have been to Addis Ababa. There are a lot of mega projects. The city is expanding. But then it seems like a contradiction that the number of unemployed youth is rising instead. How do you account for that? It seems like a contradiction.
That has been the story of Ethiopia in the last decade, because you have a country that is supposedly growing at a 10% annual GDP growth, and supposedly the fastest growing economy in the continent of Africa. But at the same time, you see the poor getting poorer and poorer, the living standards rising, and essentially the few people at the top who have connections to the ruling party getting rich and rich. So the contradiction is real, and one can observe by simply, I think, leaving the capital. But what is happening in the capital, Addis Ababa, is, I think, a smokescreen, essentially, where the government is focusing on high-rise buildings, which most Ethiopians can't afford to rent or lease, basically to attract more foreign investment and also project an image of a rising country that the government hopes will join the leagues of middle-income countries in 2030. So it's a big contradiction in that development. Obviously, the growth is not helping the poor, as we have seen. 15 million people in Ethiopia today, or at least by January, will need emergency food aid. So the development that you see or that people see in Addis Ababa may, I'm afraid, be limited to the people who are at the forefront or people who are connecting to the party, and is not lifting the poor up as the government repeatedly claims.
I see. Geresu, some people have called for an immediate halt to the excessive use of force by the security personnel and called for an independent and impartial investigation into the killings and the prosecution of these those who arrested those students. But as Mohammed mentioned earlier on, as we know from experience, institutions like judiciary and police in some one-party-dominated countries seem to be fused with the state. Is it possible for an independent commission to be put in place or the crackdown to be lessened?
I don't think so. Over the last 23 years, there are a lot of cases when this kind of severe crackdown happen, be it on students or other popular movements, but no investigation has been done yet. Ethiopia is a country which is dominated not only by one party, but very small clique controlling everything, be it judiciary, for the parliament and all the major government institutions, be it media. So there is a possibility that there would be some kind of investigation. Is not there, and if it is there, then it will be fake. It happened in 2005, after the election, and there was a report, but those who were assigned by the parliament to undertake the investigation, some of them were forced to change the report, and some of them even forced to leave the country. So the possibility that there could be some kind of independent and neutral investigation, and some kind of measure would be taken on those who involved in killing people is not there, I think, because the state has no any shred of democratic quality, and it is dominated by a very small clique, and the whole economy, the whole institution is controlled by this clique. And if, just to give you an information, in 2012, there was a report from the Ethiopian Ministry of Trade, and according to that report, 70% of the tax is paid by 962 business people. So you can see how the concentration of wealth in the hands of very few people, and the so-called this booming economy myth is not true, and a lot of people are becoming very poor than even ever been in that country.
Mohamed, do you share Gareth's pessimism there? Because the picture he paints is not a very good one.
I wish I could say that I don't, but I do share Gareth's concerns because, as he said, in addition to the government monopolizing the legal system in all institutions of government, there is no free press in the country. In all the independent media has essentially been shut down, and the opposition faces increasing scrutiny and increasing repression. And also, you know, there are no independent civil society organizations that could hold the government accountable, that could do the kind of investigation that you just mentioned. In the absence of such institutions in a country where the ruling party just in the past May held an election, essentially ran against itself, and won the election by 100%, which in a lot of democracies would be unacceptable. So in an environment like that, unfortunately, we are not going to see any investigation or accountability for these things. And this, I think, beyond the current protest, beyond the lack of, beyond the impunity for these abuses, I think it bodes ill for the country's future. And because it's essentially marginalizes a large community that already feels disfranchised, and it alienates people and makes the people to consider other means of seeking justice, and also maybe even in the long run removing the government by force if the democratic avenues are shut down. So this is bad for Ethiopia's future. It will reverse the current growth that the government likes to triumphant. It will destabilize the region unless the government actually comes with its senses and makes amends and involves the people in development and also governance.
Yeah, it's actually very interesting that there's been little or limited media coverage of the ongoing protests. And there are strong restrictions on free press in Ethiopia, as CPJ has mentioned in several reports. Lastly, we're running out of time, Gereshu. How big is the factor of self-rule of the Roma people playing to all this?
The fact
that there are some people say that all this may be as a result that maybe the Roma people want to have the self-rule.
It is an extension of that demand. I mean, in Ethiopia, the ruling party belonged to some single group. dominated by TPLF, Tigray Liberation Front, which represents 6% of the total population of Ethiopia. So all the national groups, be it Oromo, Amara, and the rest of the people, are not exercising, even in limited way, their self-rule. There is a strong sense of marginalization, strong sense of exclusion, and there is a practically they are excluded from the economic activity, voicing in the or participating seriously in the ruling the country. So in the case of Oromo, it is much more stronger. The Oromia region is the largest region, which contributes like 60% of the GDP. The population is like 40%. But the say they have in the government is very minimal, and everybody on an Oromo is like, once you are an Oromo, then you are easily susceptible to be targeted by the government. The youth is like 72% of the Oromo youth is below 30%. Percent, and those youths are not getting any. They don't have any prospect in that country. So there is a serious, real, and perception of being marginalized and the lack of self-rule. So this contributed to the give a background to the movement. The triggering is a master plan, but there is total frustration of due to economic, political, and corruption in the country.
Okay, now as we run out of time, Mohammed, how do you see this one being resolved in your opinion?
Say that again. Sorry.
I'm asking, how do you see this the protest being resolved and the people's complaints about the so-called land grab?
I think the protesters have a very very clear demand. They're asking the government to scrap the master plan. And they are asking the government to stop killing peaceful protesters, and the constitution allows for peaceful demonstrations, and they are asking to be allowed to freely exercise their democratic rights, which are supposedly enshrined in the constitution. Again, you know, on this idea of self-rule, when Oromos call for self-rule, people think that is a call for independence, a call for separating from Ethiopia. That's not what the protesters are asking for. They are asking for very basic rights. And the government can allow them to protest freely, to hear their grievances, and bring the people to their negotiating table and involve them in future development planning if there is a need to expand Addis Ababa or to improve coordination or service provision. I think people should be involved in both processes. And if that is done, the protesters are not asking for removing the government, at least so far that's not what we are hearing. So if the government wants to resolve this, actually the protest can easily be resolved by meeting these demands and holding the police and security forces who are engaging in this overtly violent repression and crackdown accountable for their actions, and releasing all the people who are arrested in the process, and political prisoners who were arrested last year and the years before for similar issues.
I see.
So these are the demands, and I think the government knows what to do, but unfortunately they're not responding in a way that it could de-escalate the situation, but instead, as we have seen in many, many previous occasions, they are accusing the opposition and other diaspora-based groups.
Yeah, unfortunately, we are out of time, my friend, but I'm told even there are even protests organized by the diaspora activists. Well, this is the time we have for this edition of Reporters Roundtable. I'd like to thank our panel, Mohammed Ademo, a journalist with Al Jazeera and AllPride.com. And thank you, Geresu Tufa, a human rights activist based in Amsterdam. Gentlemen, thanks very much for being on the show.
Thank you, Douglas.
Thank you, Douglas.
You're welcome. Our producer was Jackson Mufunganyi, and our engineer tonight was the jolly and jovial Nashwan Kali. We'll be back again next week with another edition of Reporters Roundtable. A reminder that in case you missed any part of this program, you can go to our website and get to it, and you can listen to it from there. You can also drop us a line. Our email address is reporters@vionews.com. Thanks for tuning in tonight, and until next week, I'm your host, Douglas Impoga, wishing you all the best.